We're happy to bring in Nate Duncan from the Dunked On podcast and the NBA Twitter show, a fantastic second screen experience when you're watching NBA games. Nate, what's going on, my man? How are you?
How you doing? So what were you guys talking about? LeBron like being favored in finals? Or
no, what we were talking about was in the eight NBA finals that LeBron James has played in, how many of them has he been the absolute best player on the floor when the series was over?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Yeah, so definitely not 2011, definitely not 2007. 2015, I thought was dubious, though most people don't agree with me. I thought he was still the best in 2014, even though they lost. So, I mean, all but maybe three of them, okay. Probably, I would say.
2015, was that the first Warriors one? Which one was that?
Yes. Yeah, that was the one where he averaged a triple-double for the whole series, but he wasn't really efficient, and like he couldn't hit a jumper.
But that's the one where they lost Kyrie and Kevin Love. You don't think he was the best player on the floor in that series?
No, I thought Steph Curry should have got the MVP, actually.
Interesting.
Okay. I'm in the minority on that, I realize. But I thought LeBron, like, he was really inefficient in that series, and he couldn't hit a jumper at all, and I thought that really hurt him. Like, he had to just bludgeon into the paint every time, and I thought that Curry... You know, he had one really bad game in game two, but the way that he, like, stretched the defense, their whole offensive system was built around him. I thought that he should have won it rather than Iguodala, but, you know, like I said, that's some subtleties to that point, I guess, and a lot of people don't agree with me.
Nate, what about the outlook for this series? We know they're the heavy underdogs. We were talking earlier about, you know, the roadmap. Your Cavs are going to try. They obviously still want to win. They believe they can win. How can they do it? What's the best Cavs lineup that makes this somehow, some way work for Cleveland?
You know, I thought that their best option would be kind of to go back to that 2015 strategy of really trying to switch everything, or they didn't switch everything in that series, but, you know, slow the game down, make it a real grind it out, and then maybe, you know, they actually have enough like-size guys that they could kind of try to copy the Houston Rockets defensive strategy, not that they're as many good defenders as the Rockets do. But I think that actually is somewhat compromised now by the fact that Kevin Love is going to be back and playing. Like, I think Kevin Love against probably 28 of the other teams is really helpful. But against the Warriors, I think he just gives them such a place to attack defensively. And you can't switch everything now if you got Love on the floor.
Nate, it feels like the Warriors haven't played particularly well, not just in the last series against Houston, but they acknowledge that they've kind of, I think Steve Kerr even said, I don't remember the word that he used, but I'll use the word splinters along the way here, particularly during the regular season. Is there any reason to believe that that won't continue into the NBA Finals and maybe the Cavs could steal a couple of games here and make it interesting?
Oh, I picked it in five, like, you know, 98% of all other people did it. And frankly, that was more based on, I think, the fact that the Warriors will let up in a game or maybe two, rather, as you alluded to, rather than that I think the Cavs match up particularly well against them. And I mean, we have to remember, too, that Cleveland, they have some kind of voodoo magic over the Raptors, but they struggled with two teams that are kind of, you know, high 40s win type of talent teams in Boston and Indiana, going to seven both those times. And the Warriors, even without Andre Iguodala, are just a totally different animal in terms of their offense in particular. And so I don't see how Cleveland can stop the Warriors. And then I do think maybe they can score a little better than we might think, just because Andre Iguodala is going to miss at least the first game and could go longer than that. But beyond that, I don't see how they have enough talent. And the Warriors have defended LeBron probably better than anybody has in these last few years.
Nate, I'm curious about the faces that we haven't seen, some guys that haven't played that much for either team in the last couple of series. Do you think any of them, whether that's David West, JaVale McGee, Rodney Hood, because it's about matchups, do we see some different looks from either Coach Kerr or Ty Lue from different guys in this series, you think?
Kerr, yes, I think so, especially depending on how much Tristan Thompson plays or Larry Nance. Those are guys that the Warriors centers can match up with pretty well. I think much of it will depend on whether Lou decides to go back to playing Kevin Love at center, as he had for a lot of the playoffs and the regular season. Maybe they feel like we just need to get this much offense on the floor, and that, you know, we can bomb some three-pointers and maybe go toe-to-toe with the Warriors that way, as opposed to trying to defend them. If Love is at center, then the Warriors are basically stuck in the same matchups that they had to use in the Rockets series, where traditional centers are going to be huge liabilities. If you're playing Tristan Thompson and Larry Nance, as you would imagine they would probably start doing, since that was successful in the Celtics series, then guys like David West, I don't know about McGee necessarily, but maybe Petrulia, whom they've liked before as a boxed-out guy on Tristan Thompson, you might see those guys get a little more run.
Nate Duncan of the Daily Dunked On podcast and the Twitter NBA show with us here on the Lowdown. Big deal, Iguodala's out?
Yeah, it's. I mean, we saw it in the Rockets series too. I think that series is over in six, if not five, if Andre Iguodala continues to play. I mean, getting a fifth guy for the Warriors is difficult. Like, Jordan Bell shows flashes, but Steve Kerr doesn't necessarily trust him. Kevon Looney is a massive liability on offense. Can't really finish around the rim. Can't really shoot. He's slow. Sean Livingston can't shoot outside of 15 feet and probably isn't strong enough to guard LeBron the way that Andre Iguodala is. So, yeah, I mean, they have a lot fewer matchups. But one thing that they can try maybe is a little more Klay Thompson on LeBron, because now Klay doesn't have to guard Kyrie Irving anymore. So that will free up another guy to guard LeBron potentially.
You know, we've all marveled at what LeBron's done and how, you know, the minutes he's played and the minutes he's played in the postseason. I think one thing that last year showed, I mean, he had a tough time with Durant, understandably so. Do you think the Cavs put LeBron on Durant, or who are they going to put on Kevin Durant in this series?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, and much of that depends on the role of Kevin Love and whether they're playing him at center or power forward. I think really the only guy who makes sense outside of LeBron would be Jeff Green, and Green is at least has some size. You know, Anthony Slater wrote a piece saying that, you know, KD used to cook Jeff Green back when they were teammates, but a lot of time has passed since then, of course. But Green at least has the size. But if you're going to play Green, now what are you playing him at the three? And you're going to play Thompson and Love together? Now you probably don't have enough shooting on the floor. Or you're going to have to play Love at center, or you're not going to play him as much. And, you know, certainly there'll be an excuse to not play him as much because he's coming off the concussion. But it does make things a lot harder defensively with Love in there, both because of his own limitations, and then also if you're going to try and play Jeff Green as the one guy who can at least kind of match up with Durant. I'm not saying he's going to stop him by any means. So it does become difficult, right?
Nate, what about the teams that just lost? What do you think their offseason looks like? Boston, maybe there's not so much to talk about there, given that the guys that are coming back that are already on their roster. But what about the Houston Rockets? What is their offseason going to look like?
Funny you should ask, actually, because we just did a whole podcast on that. But assuming that they don't get any huge, big free agent score like a LeBron James, bringing back this roster is going to prove exceedingly expensive. You know, they are looking at, you know, if you project that Clint Capella is going to get over $20 million per year, which seems likely, Trevor Ariza, you know, my projection, I don't know this isn't source, but, you know, something maybe in the $10 to $15 million range for next year. Chris Paul, if he gets his max of starting at $35 million per year, now you're looking at just an enormous luxury tax bill, at least the level of where the Cavs have been these last few years, possibly even more than that, depending on if they want to bring in even someone else or re-sign Luka Mbamute with their mini mid-level exception, which is about $5.5 million. This year. So they're looking at, you know, $60 million luxury tax bill, $80 million luxury tax bill. And so they probably need to find a way to move on from Sacramento native Ryan Anderson, but he's got $20 million per season and two more years left. And so even if they wanted to get into trading more future first round picks, do they have enough ammo to do that? Would they try to trade him for someone who's just making a little bit less, but also fits in their system more? And then they give up an asset as well. But other than their two, you know, a couple first round picks in the future, when they're projecting to be very low, those first round picks, because they'll be good, not a ton that they can trade as an enticement for a team to take Anderson.
Yeah, you're so good at these numbers, Nate. Like, how, and we've heard the LeBron rumor, whether there's any validity to it or not, but how would that even happen? How could they even execute getting LeBron James?
Well, it almost certainly would have to involve LeBron opting into the final year of his contract in the same fashion that Chris Paul did. The good news for them is that if LeBron were to do that, he wouldn't actually be leaving money on the table versus what a new contract would be. It's about $35 million either way, unless he wants to sign another long-term deal. But he's playing so well, it doesn't seem like that's necessarily something that would be required. So now, if you want to trade for him, you've got to get up to 80% of his salary. So that's basically about $28 million in salary. And how can you do that? Well, Anderson, and then they have Nene making about $3 million, and then they have a number of smaller contracts for the minimum that if they put all those together, they just barely could come up with enough. Now, if LeBron is leaving the Cleveland Cavaliers, well, why did the Cleveland Cavaliers want to do that trade to take on bad money in Anderson? And they're also, you know, they don't want to pay the tax anymore if LeBron's leaving. They want to get cheap. They're in the repeater tax right now. So what inducement could there be? Maybe a third team would have to be involved there somehow as well. I mean, Cleveland doesn't want to lose him for nothing, but the mechanics are extremely, extremely difficult. And maybe it could involve, you know, someone like Chris Paul taking a lot less money, but as the head of the players union, you don't expect that he would want to do that.
Coming up on the Daily Dunked On podcast, Nate Duncan describes how Ryan Anderson and Nene were traded for LeBron James. My goodness, man. That's, wow. Just saying that out loud, I feel dumber. That's incredible that that's a possibility.
That's how, yeah, there's
20
no
million.
Way.
Ryan Anderson makes $20 million. Extraordinary. Yeah. I don't want to look past. Sorry, Nate, go ahead.
Yeah, I do think people are a little unfair on the Anderson contract because that was necessary to kind of get the Rockets back into contention. Like, if you remember, they were 41-41 the year that they signed him and Eric Gordon, and they got Mike D'Antoni as the coach, and then they're right back to a 55-win team, and then Chris Paul wanted to join that 55-win team. So Anderson, certainly not worth that contract now. Maybe he never was, but he was important in getting them back to being a competitive team.
But we really judge guys on the amount of money that they make. I mean, that's like true. Jason and I talk about that all the time. If you're looking at a player that makes, you know, if Ryan Anderson made $8 million, he's the biggest bargain in the league.
Right.
But he doesn't. He makes 20 and he's lumped in. Now, all of a sudden, right, you know, fair or not, he's lumped in with those guys who reap the benefit of those two summers where Timofey Mozgov was getting, you know, $60 or $70 million contracts or whatever those insane numbers were.
Yeah, no, that summer of 2016. And, yeah, I mean, you know, you could criticize Anderson's contract, and then when you consider how much money there was around the league, I mean, at least he could play. At least he helped them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Mozgov, Deng, Yad Mahimi, Evan Turner, Myers Leonard. I mean, you can go down the list. Like, Anderson is maybe like the 15th worst contract signed that offseason.
Nate, I want to ask you what we're asking our listeners on Facebook. They've gotten a little crazy with their answers, but we'll ask you the question anyway. What player would you add to the Cavs that would make you feel like they'd have a chance to beat the Warriors?
Yeah, like realistically this offseason?
No, like right. I mean, we're lumping.
Vacuum.
No, we're lumping this player in right now. And yeah, forget contracts. Like, they would join the Cavs and you'd give them a chance.
Is Kyrie Irving healthy?
Sure.
That is the next to Jesus.
Yeah,
that has been the
Jesus.
Second next to Jesus. That has been the second most common response is a healthy Kyrie Irving.
Yeah. No. All right. Well, that's joking aside. I think you'd want someone actually, in theory, with more two way ability. Certainly, like, you know, a healthy Kawhi Leonard, a Paul George. You know, someone who can hit the 3-pointer and then also defend on the other end. I mean, that's probably your number one type of player that they would need the most. Someone who also then can create to some degree as well outside of LeBron, take a little of the burden off of him.
Are you and Danny doing the Twitter show tonight for Game 1?
No, we're actually going to be in the arena at Oracle for Games 1 and 2, the Golden State home games, but we'll be doing it for the road games in the series in Cleveland.
Okay, fantastic. Nate, we appreciate you as always. Thank you, my man.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, that is Nate Duncan, the Daily Dunked On podcast. That's a great listen. A lot of cap stuff is on there. Him and Danny LaRue do a fantastic job of breaking this stuff down. It's not going to be a part of Game 1 tonight, but if you're looking for a second screen experience for Games 3 and 4 in Cleveland, log on to Twitter, search the hashtag Twitter NBA Show, and or just go to Nate Duncan's page. He's a great follow. It's a great listen, and it's very inside stuff. Like, they really like to break down plays. They're very much film nerds. He's a cap nerd. He's a really great guy to talk about basketball.